Hello.
Hi, Mark Silverberg here.
Hi, Mark. Joan Roth.
Hi, Joan.
You're the second person here. I'm the first.
Well, we've still got another couple minutes.
Yes, we do. I dial in early just in case.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Ava did send a list of how many people were had signed up. 1, 2, 3.
Ava Schutzman.
Hi, Ava.
Hi.
How you doing?
Doing great. That Joan?
That's Joan, and we have Mark Silverberg on the line.
Hello, Mark, and I assume Bill also?
No, this is it so far.
No.
Oh, okay.
We're early. I don't even have 6 o'clock yet, so I start early. And I'm just thinking how many people there could be, up to 10, 15 people, it looks like.
Yeah, I think most of the board, many of the other board members and the other speakers weren't going to attend. So I think, and I got a couple of, people who signed up and then something came up and, I basically said, well, listen to the recording after the fact.
Right. Yeah, that happened. Life changes.
Right. So, I'm thinking maybe 10 or 12.
Yep.
If that.
So, Mark, what do you do now?
Well, I'm still semi-retired. I've been doing some consulting, IT infrastructure consulting.
Uh-huh.
But, I was a busy year for the past couple of years, but things have been kind of slow for the past year or so.
Yeah, I would expect so.
So, but I'm not all that, I'm looking at it from a passive perspective, so I'm sort of enjoying the retirement to a degree.
Good. Good. I'm semi-retired, and I switched careers.
Oh.
I'm now a photographer.
All right.
So, I'm having lots of fun.
Good.
And that's sort of a part-time thing, too, because I do take off when I want to.
So, Mark, have you done any selling to the federal government before?
Not specifically, no. So I'm just following it for general background information.
Yeah, okay. Well, I hope you can learn something that you can actually end up developing into some kind of business. That would be very cool.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Consulting is probably a different animal than, than products. But,
right.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
You never know, but Bill will be able to tell you, for consultants, because he hires all kinds of services, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's Bill Costello calling in.
Hi, Bill.
Good
Joan
evening.
Roth.
Good evening, everyone.
Hi, Bill.
Those of us are
on the side.
We have Ava on the phone and Mark Silverberg on the phone so far.
Ava's my pen pal. You know that.
That's right.
Without Ava, this wouldn't happen. So we give her a lot of thanks.
I'm going to set the phone in just for a second. I'll get a pencil and pen, all right?
Okay.
Well, I'm back. Sorry.
Okay, Bill.
My former home office. And my kids sort of took it over, so I had to arm wrestle my son to get the computer here. My wife.
How old was your son?
Yeah, well, she put new carpet in, and all my home office stuff is now in boxes, with everything labeled miscellaneous. So.
Well, that'll be helpful in unpacking.
I couldn't find my conference phone, so I'm on a regular phone, so I won't be able to put on speaker, unfortunately.
That's okay, as long as you can speak.
Yep.
We can hear you.
If I need to get the computer, I can sort of slide over there and get it. So we'll get it done.
Okay, so you spend most of your time in the office then?
Yeah, I actually work in an office environment, and I go out sometimes, but not too much.
Mm-hmm.
But very frankly, I had to work at home. I went to work for IBM when I left digital, and I walked into IBM in a suit and tie, you know, with a box of stuff, and you know, all the stuff that our spouse won't let us keep at home, all the stupid bugs and whatever. And they're like, "Why are you here? You know, who are you?" And I'm there. I'm Bill Costello. I work with a guy out of the Pittsburgh area, and they said, "We don't work here. We work at home now. We don't wear suits either."
Fantastic.
Over too, as soon as I walked in the door, and
so you can go home and put your pajamas back on.
Yeah, but very frankly, I tell you, I really didn't like working at home. I didn't like the interaction with people, and especially in sales. You know, you talk about deals, you'd see somebody at the coffee maker or something.
Yep.
And, heck, I had to schedule meetings, you know, with my peers, you know, just to sit down with them.
Yeah, well, I guess the last year or two when I was at HP, we worked at home, but once a week we got together for a staff meeting.
Nice, yeah.
Which, that was good.
Well, for quite a while at DEC, I worked for people outside of Pittsburgh, so I could work at home when I felt like it, basically. Plus, I'd go to the airport from home or whatever, and I was flying around, and it didn't matter. I sort of liked that. I could go to the office when I felt like IBM, you had to check out a cube. And they'd have enough cubes for everybody. You know, so I'd be there with a cube. I'd look out the window. I'd see somebody coming in with this big, you know, luggage care, all their stuff they were bringing to the office. And they'd come in. They'd say, "Oh, sorry, no cubes available." So I said, "Boy, I don't know about that." But IBM saved a lot of money. They saved billions of dollars in real estate costs.
I don't think there's much left here in the Massachusetts area in terms of real estate.
No, Marlboro's the only site. Marlboro and Andover now.
Yeah, they covered are closing Marlboro if they haven't done it already.
Right, it's closing the end of this year. Well, supposedly closed by the end of this year, but I would guess probably September, October time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Like my wife had an interesting question once. She said, "Well, how come they don't pay us for the floor space? How come they don't pay us for extra electricity use, about 20% more electricity, and all the other things?" Okay, save money.
That's right.
There's benefits to it also. It's just a combination. But I'm glad I'm back in the office environment.
Mm-hmm.
Like that for about 5-6 years now.
Okay, well, we won't tell the federal government this.
Yeah, I don't mind commuting. I don't have any traffic, but like some people do.
So I think we'll wait another minute or two, and then we'll ask you to get started, Bill.
Absolutely.
This call is going to be recorded so that those that weren't able to dial in because something else came up will be able to listen to what we are saying.
Well, I think we've got about a baker's dozen, by my count at least.
Yep.
Hopefully it'll all work out. You know, maybe I can help somebody. That's what I'm here for. Digital was good to me, and if I can give back a little, you know, I mean, I had a lot of people help me land big deals. It wasn't just me. And in fact, I just met with one of my counterparts at Digital just for lunch today, and he's out of work, 62 years old, and hasn't worked since last July.
Come here.
He's an Air Force combat veteran from Vietnam.
Wow.
I said, "Ted, what are you going
to do?" That's tough.
You're going to take a pay cut. You're going to go to the government.
Will the government take people at the age of 62?
I'm sorry?
Will the government take people, as you know, that are 62 years old?
Absolutely. There's no mandatory retirement age for the government. In fact, I took my first job as a civilian working for the Air Force Reserve. I met a woman there, and she said, "Bill, I know who you are because my daughter is one of your students. I teach college class at night." The daughter was in her 40s at that time. This woman was, I think, 72 when I met her. She started with the federal government in her 50s.
Wow.
So she, in fact, she just retired about a year ago. I was invited to a retirement party. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it. And she worked as long as she wanted, basically. They can't force you out. Like in my job, I'm dual status. I'm military and civilian, so at age 60, I'm done. Unless I find another civilian position.
Okay.
Yeah, remember, that's one of the things I try to explain to people. The federal government writes all the laws about discrimination. So they have to abide by them. So,
okay.
Discrimination is
theoretical. Because in the private world, you know, so to speak, looking for a job at 62 is almost impossible. Unless you're going to go out on your own.
Well,
Well, I'll be very frank with you. I was contemplating making a career change, you know, early on, because I didn't think I could keep up the pace in my 50s in being in sales and IT sales and traveling, and then of course, you know, just we had to do more and more deals every year, and so I went for a master's in adult education in 1992. I started, and I was still at Digital, and people said, "Bill, you're crazy. Why don't you go for your MBA?" I said, "I want to get out of this business one of these days. Okay, I don't want. I already got my MBA on the streets. I don't need to go to school for it." So try to prepare.
Yeah, it made sense.
I just didn't think I could keep it up. I really didn't, and that was I was in my 40s then.
Yep. Well, you were right. You hedged your bets and you did well.
When I talk to friends of mine that are still in the business, I feel sorry for them. Some of them, but I had a friend of mine get whacked by IBM, who was there 26 years. He was second in his region.
Sorry. I guess we should get started.
Right.
And as other people come on, I'm hoping they'll introduce themselves. And you've already talked a bit about what you've been doing, so Major Sergeant Bill Costello, the floor is yours. And there is a handout that Ava sent out as well. I hope there.
I have that. I sent basically about 10 links with explanations, which I would say is sort of like the top 10 to use if you're trying to do business with the federal government, if you want to actually land a government contract. And that's what I do. My job is contracting. I've been doing that for about a year and a half. And within the federal government, we are tasked with hiring small businesses. We're basically not permitted to hire a large business unless we can't find a small business that has the... In fact, I just had a deal with a small business last week that couldn't provide the equipment we needed, so I had to go to a large company. But basically, we're prohibited from that. So one of the things I thought about when I took this job was, hey, I'm sure there's some deckies out there that own their own businesses, have small companies. You know, maybe down the road they could do business with the federal government. The good news is you're going to get paid. Bad news, it takes a little bit longer to get paid. But you know,
typically, how long does it take to get paid?
Well, it'll take at least 30 to 60 days.
Oh, that's with anybody.
Yeah, well, that's especially these days when they have consultants telling companies how to avoid paying their AR for 90 or more days, you know.
Yeah.
But our contracts are net 30, but by the time you actually enter the system, and it really depends on what agency you're dealing with. I deal with the DOD, so there's something called DFAS, which is Defense Finance Accounting Service, the big location we use in Columbus, Ohio. So you have to submit an invoice into an automated system, and so I'm saying, hey, once the job's done, you submit it, probably another 30 to 45 days, you'll have your money. If you don't
it's not bad.
It might take a little more time to do it. So that's why one of the first link I put up on this handout was for the SBA, which is the Small Business Administration. And the Small Business Administration is the best place to go if you're looking for help. And they have regions. Each city has different sections. Like in Pittsburgh, they cover the tri-state area. A lot of people that work with the SBA were in business. They work for corporations. They understand business. And that really helps. The SBA, that site is like a general know-it-all site. So if you're interested in doing business with the government, it'll give you a lot of ideas how you can do business with the government, how you can register with the government, things like that. And they explain quite a bit about set-asides. And set-asides are for minorities. Hub zone, like depressed areas, women, female-owned businesses are big. Veteran-owned that are disabled veterans. So those, in many agencies, those companies get hiring preference. So if you have a female-owned business and a male-owned business, white male, everything else being equal, female business is hired.
Yeah, I know a woman who, she runs a company for her husband. They lay bricks and build buildings. She's the owner because
people do that a lot.
She's a woman.
And we personally don't, that's not our business. If they want to do that, they want to make the woman the president of the bricklaying company, that's up to them.
Yep.
We have a company here that we've hired for construction projects called RB Vetco. You can imagine the VET stands for veteran, CO company. The RB is Rocky Blyer. He used to be a Steeler back in the day, if you remember that, in the 70s. He was wounded in Vietnam. That's why it's a really neat story how he came back from a grenade injury to play pro football. Do you think, does anybody think RB Vetco has Rocky Blyer out there doing construction? No. But he's a combat wounded veteran. So the company comes up as a veteran owned stable.
Good for him.
Now, within SBA, I would just, you know, go on there, take a look at some of the hiring programs. Find out who the contact would be for the SBA. And with how they do, they line things up according to the type of industry you're in and make contact there. The SBA also runs the main system that we use every time we do a contract. It's called CCR, Central Contract Registration System. We call it the registry, but that is the first place I look to find a company to do a job. Now, when we go out to hire a company, we already have approved, authorized funding. So, being in sales like I was for years, my second question after how are you doing this morning is, do you have money? You can be assured if the government's going out soliciting a contract, there's money.
Okay, that's good.
Now, you'd probably ask the obvious question is, you know, how do I distinguish myself out in CCR? Be a lot of companies out there. Now, what we do is, when I first got there, since I worked for the PA Air National Guard, we were looking basically at companies in Western Pennsylvania. And I said, well, that sounds okay, but what about West Virginia and Ohio? We're basically a half hour to 45 minutes from those two states. And I know if you're from New England, you know, states are a little smaller up there and a lot closer. So I went out and looked, did searches in CCR for Ohio and West Virginia. Now what we do is we look at the job that's requested by the requester, again, with authorized funding. So if the requester says, for example, well, let me just go back one. What businesses are people on the call? Is there a certain example you could give me? I could use that. What type of businesses are you?
Mark, do you want to?
Requester, they're going to need. They need a company to do a job. Okay, so I got to find them.
Well, I know we have Mark Silverberg, who is a consultant in the IT world. I don't know who else. Other companies are there.
What we do is we would take the NAICS code for IT consulting. And that's the North American Industrial Classification System. Is anybody not familiar with that? If you remember the olden days, they were called SIC codes, Standard Industrial Classification. Basically,
yeah.
NAICS replaced that for all of the North American Free Trade Agreement. And if you look at a NAICS code, the first number sort of gives you an indicator of what type of business. Like 4 is manufacturing. 5 is services like HVAC, electrical services, something of that nature. So what you want to do is make sure that you're listed in the CCR, and I have the registration link there on the handout, to find out where do you fit. Now, the problem I have sometimes with certain companies is they put a bunch of NAICS codes out there. Sort of like throw it against the wall. Well, right off the bat, my antenna's up. No small business can do 22 things. You know what I mean? Small businesses are good at a niche market. They're specialists. So I try to explain when companies, especially I'm trying to help companies get registered, is what you want to do is find 2 or 3 NAICS codes, okay, that really fit what you do. And put it out there. And that's how we find companies. We look under the NAICS code. Now, it's real important because if you're not registered with CCR, you cannot do business with the government. you're in discussion. So if you decide you don't want to bother with it, then you won't get any government business. Unless you contract out with someone else, like on a sub. Now, you can't sub to the government. Now, somebody mentioned, you know, they knew a company where the wife was basically the president of the Brick Lane company, but in reality, what did she really do? What a lot of large corporations will do is they know that the government wants to hire small business. So we have sort of like the opposite, what you might see in the IT world. We have large companies who sub to small companies. Sort of the opposite. So a large company can say, look, I want to win some government business. I'm not going to get hired because I'm a multi-billion-dollar company. I'm going to team up with a small business to do it. That's fine. That's legal. Now, remember, whoever signs the contract is liable for performing the work. So what you want to do is you want to make sure that you do due diligence on the companies that you're teaming up with. And you can look at CCR. You can also go to the ELP system, which I believe, I know it's on here. I'm sure I'll give you the number.
Number three?
Yep, I'm right on the third one. I was exactly right. The excluded party list system helps. That system there captures companies who did not perform on their contractual obligations to the government. They're basically disbarred from doing business with the government. So what you want to be careful about is if you team up with a company and you find them in this ELP system, you might have an issue. So you want to avoid being in that ELP system because once you're in there, it's hard to get out of there. And so you can go in there. It's a public. All of those first three websites are all public. You can go out. You can take a look. So if you have a company that's talking to you, hey, I'd like to team up with you. I know you're a small business. You might be able to win a contract with the government. You're female-owned. You're minority-owned, whatever it might be. You might want to check them out in there before you go ahead and pursue anything with them. Might save you a lot of grief. It's okay if I drink a beer, right?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Because I just did that. It's one thing I learned about when I went to work for the military. My language deteriorated. And I drank more beer for some reason. I guess it's just something. I'd be at the dinner table, my kids would say, "Daddy, what's your language?" You know. It's an interesting. It's a really interesting culture shift when you go from the corporate world to military. Are there any questions on those three? Those are sort of tied together there. Remember, the SBA actually hosts CCR. I gave you the CCR link, direct link, which is bbn.gov, but you can get to it from the SBA site. So we take a look at size of the company by revenue, not by profit. And also we take a look at the small business criteria, NAICS code, and whether the company is 8A, registered with the government, HUB zone, which is depressed areas, service disabled veterans, women-owned, minority-owned, and veteran-owned businesses. Okay, anything else I can tell you about that? Did I come up with any questions?
That's a good overview.
All right. Okay, now, the EPLS system, ELP system, ties into a larger organization within the government, and that's called the GSA. Anybody heard of the GSA? You may have heard that out there. It's sort of popular.
Yep.
General Services Administration. The General Services Administration is sort of like, if you take our industry, it's like a VAR. They actually go out and buy products and services in bulk to resell to other government agencies. So if you're in a business where you're looking to sell a volume of, Maybe you're selling laptop systems or telecom, whatever it might be. The Air Force will go out and buy at one time tens of thousands of things. So that's something you look at too. If you're a smart business, you're a large business, you might want to team up with a smaller company. In our industry, a bar, but think of the GSA as basically as a reseller. And they sell things from pens and pencils up to multi-million dollar, you know, supercomputers, anywhere in between. So that's a pretty good place to go. And can anybody give me an idea why they think that would be beneficial to somebody like me that's in the contracting office? Now remember, if I do a contract with a company, it's for a small amount. If you're selling commodities or products to the federal government, over $3,000, you got to have a contract. If you're selling services, like, say, IT consulting, $2,500. It has to be a contract.
That's it?
Yes, ma'am.
Whoa.
That's a real pain in the butt for people like me. I had one of my requesters, our telecom IT, called me yesterday and said, "Hey, Bill, we want to bring Verizon on site, okay, because we have to have them look at the service on our pole, on our base, and they want to charge us." I said, "Okay, what do they want to charge you?" He says, "Well, it's like $2,600, and I said, "Tell them to make it $24.99, okay, you can pay them with a credit card. If it's $2,500 or more, I got to do a contract. That's going to take a little while." So the big benefit of helping to help small business with the GSA is that the contracts are pre-negotiated. So if I go out to your company and it shows that you are GSA registered, you have a schedule. Has anybody ever sold to the federal government? Do you ever hear of the schedule? You're registered, your company's registered, you have your products on a schedule, they call it. If it's not on the schedule, it's called open market.
Yes. Okay.
Right? And some companies will say, "Well, hey, you know, 80% of it on the schedule, the rest is open market." So we have to be careful of that ratio there. But with the GSA, pre-negotiated contracts mean when I go to your company, I can buy directly from you by giving you an order acknowledgement. We call them delivery order. That's it. No contracts. So I could go out and execute a multi-million dollar contract, $100,000 with your company without a contract. All I'd have to do is send you a delivery order acknowledgement. That's it. Everything else is done by the GSA. Plus, the GSA will do blanket contracts and multi-year contracts. So once that's in place for you, you're on the GSA system. Most GSA products and services can be bought electronically. They have a system called GSA eBuy. And I can go on there. I'll give you an example of what I ordered, something I ordered at the end of the fiscal year. I ordered hazardous material buildings, entire buildings, through the GSA. Just wanted a delivery order. And each building was $40,000 to $50,000 a piece. So if I can find a company that's on the GSA schedule, and they're competitive, that saves me a ton of work. Plus, we get faster deliveries, and we know that, you know, someone way better than me executed a contract. You know, they didn't leave anything left out of it. So that's number four. And that's how to obtain a contract and getting on the GSA schedule to their port. Now, if you drill down on number five, they have a special section for the GSA and small businesses. So how can you register your company with the GSA and show people like me that you're disadvantaged, minority-owned, women-owned, HUBZone certified, maybe veteran or service-disabled veteran-owned? So whatever you are, it comes up and it automatically gives preference. That's also a pretty big benefit for us. Okay. So I was going to stop there and see if anybody has any questions on that so far.
Not me.
Okay. I was just, like I mentioned, I had lunch with a friend of mine that's an old, you know, old-time deckie out of work. And I just had a phone conversation with another friend of mine from deck days. I'm trying to help her because she's selling to some Air Force bases right now. And she had an obvious question. She said, "Bill, I don't understand who to sell to in the government. Like, who do I sell to on a base?" Well, in our job, if you think about the contracting, I mentioned to you contracts have to be executed on a small amount of money. We are really not the requester of the service. We're just the people that do the purchasing. So if you look at us, we'd say you're like a purchasing arm of a corporation. Maybe contract negotiations, the people who do those kind of things, the law part of a corporation. So that's sort of what we do, but we're not really in a position to buy things. So what you want to do is, if you're trying to sell to a government agency, you need to find out who is the actual buyer, the person who's putting them, requesting for the money. And what they call that in the government is a requester. So that's the key word you want to use. So if you contact contracting office, which you could do that with any agency, every federal agency has contracting. That's one of the reasons I took this job. I can leave and go to the VA. VA here in Pittsburgh is putting a regional center in. There's jobs galore, and the jobs are higher level than my job. VA hospitals. Office of Surface Mining here in Pittsburgh. We have the OPM, the Office of Personnel Management. They're in a secure location. They can all hire me. Any federal agency has contracting. So if you're doing some prospecting, you're trying to find out who to contact, you might want to start with contracting. Start with the contracting office, then ask the obvious question is, hey, who are the requesters for the services? What kind of services and products are you looking to acquire? And what they're going to tell you about are things that are already funded. So if you need more details, hey, who's the requester? Get their phone number, give them a call, see what they're actually trying to do. That's where you actually do the selling of your product and service. Now, a requester can have a source that they recommend. They could say, hey, contracting, guess what? We'd like to hire Acme Dynamite Company. We like Wile E. Coyote. He's a good person that works for that company. And we're looking to bring that company in. It's called a suggested source. Okay, we in contracting do not have to hire that source. But if it's very specialized, sometimes there's only a couple companies that do it. So I'm going to rely on the requester. Say, hey, look, one of the services I did recently for our base, another base we have here, is lightning protection testing. They have to go out and test all the lightning rods on our hangars and write reports so that we can show the Air Force that it's safe, because if a lightning bolt hits our hangar, we have an aircraft in there, the whole thing could blow up because we do refueling tankers, so you can imagine how much fuel's in there. Well, I tried to find companies that could do lightning protection testing. I went as far away as Virginia, Indiana, New York State, Jersey, that whole area to try to find out. I was only able to find a handful of companies. That was the challenge because it's such a specialized. There's not even a NAICS code for it. So if your company does specialized services, you're good at it, it's your niche market, you want to sell that to as a requester. And if you're one of the few companies that can do it, the requester can say, hey, look, I want to use this company. And if that's the case, the requester can actually put a letter through called a sole source letter, which means this is what we have, who we have to hire. This company, the company that did the job, they're called Ace Lightning Protection. They're here in Pittsburgh area. This is why we want to hire them. They've done work for us in the past. It's good work. The reports are accurate, whatever. They justify that. I can go ahead and order services from them without using the normal channels. So if you're looking to, you know, break the log jam, have a service that's very specialized that a lot of people don't provide. If you're doing commodities, you know, it's based on price. Okay. Any questions on that? Anybody want to go back to any other points I made?
Okay. Yeah, you're doing fine.
So far, so good. Okay, now, people say, well, gee, Bill, what's going on out there? How can I find out what opportunities are out there? ESA hosts something called FedBizOps, Federal Business Opportunities, FedBizOps. Right now, there's over 80,000 opportunities out there in FedBizOps that are currently out there, and federal agencies are trying to find somebody to do work. So a good place you might want to take a look at on the GSA GSA.gov portal, is the FedBizOps section. This would be all federal agencies. All the opportunities are over $25,000. And some of them are $1 million opportunities, more than $1 million, a few hundred thousand. So the stuff's posted out there. We have systems that are integrated so that when we go out and we're starting to look for an opportunity, we can post things out to FedBizOps and put the contract out there, you know, for a certain amount of time. Let's say we're soliciting business, 30, 60 days, whatever it might be. And what happens with the government is that we have to show that we've done due diligence as far as competition is concerned. What that's called in the government, in the contracting world, is solicitation. So we have to show that we did a solicitation. Now, we can do an oral solicitation. I can call you on the phone. I can send out an email to your company, say, hey, you do this kind of work. And you might come back and say, well, I don't really have enough information to tell you. Okay, here's a statement of work provided by the requester. Send that off. Okay, yeah, we can do that kind of work. We can do it that way. Or we can put out a solicitation formally and put it into FedBizOps. So that's one place to look if you're interested. And it's you can search by geographic location. You can find out what's happening in your area. And it might be worth your while to check that out. Again, you can't do anything with the government unless you're registered in CCR. Is anybody on the call already registered with the government or doing business with the feds? Now, another thing to go back a bit on CCR. The CCR system, which is the number one thing you want to do to get registered, it's self-registration. This is why you have companies that have like 22 NAICS codes. You know, they do everything from pool maintenance to you know, IT consulting. Well, I don't think so. You know, I'm a little concerned. I have a company that I have a project, and they were veteran. They're veteran-owned, and wow, you got a lot of NAICS codes there. Yeah, we can do all kinds of things. I said, well, they're not really related. Okay, I'll send you the statement of work. And as soon as I did, it scared them off, and I never heard from them again. So I think sometimes they just put things out there, you know, maybe you'll get lucky. I wouldn't recommend it. But so that's one of the drawbacks of CCR is that since it's a self-registration system, it's sort of self-maintained, and companies will puff up what they do. So what you want to do is you want to take the next step, if you're interested in working with the government, is to go to SBA and go to ORCA. Now, this has nothing to do with whales or, you know, SeaWorld or anything. ORCA is the Online Representations and Certification Application System. ORCA, when you go on ORCA and you put things out there, the government actually investigates your company to make sure you can do what you say.
Well,
what will happen there is that eliminates a lot of these people who just puff up what they can do. So if you want to really move ahead and you want to distinguish yourself from others, you want to make sure you're differentiated from others, you may want to take a next step and go to ORCA. It's not required, but I'd recommend it to you. Now, I mentioned to you the eBuy system. GSA eBuy is very nice. I mean, it saves me so much work that I'm a big fan of eBuy. Now, some government agencies can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars by using their government credit card. I hold a government credit card and a checking account, and that's hosted by U.S. Bank. And like the Department of the Army and the Army National Guard, they regularly pay service contracts for hundreds of thousands of dollars using a credit card. So if your company is interested in doing this with the federal government, you may want to think about getting registered to do visa work, because the government purchase card, GPC card, is a visa. Now, there's a fee involved there, 2%. So you got to keep that in mind. I've had companies that said, well, Bill, tell you the truth, I'd rather go through DFAS and wait 30 days for my money than pay that fee. I did. I was assigned to the Army National Guard for the G20 summit that was here in Pittsburgh, and it was like about 8 or 10 weeks. And I did all kind of work, hotel sustainment, food, shower trailers, porta-johns, whatever it might be, for all these locations. And I find a company in Ohio to do a lot of the work for us, and just one service contract alone for one item was over $60,000. And I could have paid with a credit card, but the president of the company didn't want to pay the fee. So he said, "Bill, I'll just wait 30 days and, I'll be fine." So that's one thing you might want to take a look at. The reason I bring it up is GSA eBuy, I pre-registered my credit card in there. So when I went to buy something like those hazardous materials buildings, the company accepts a credit card, I electronically place the order, and it's built into the credit card, and they ship it. So it's pretty nice. And you can go into GSA eBuy as a vendor, and you can set the system up to give you email alerts when things come through that you might be able to bid on, something if you're interested to it. When you go into there, you have to set yourself up into various categories. Again, don't go overboard, and pick a bunch of categories. Pick categories that are very specific. They're even more specific than NAICS codes. And you start out, like one thing I've done a lot of would be uniforms, special uniforms for people going to the desert, firefighting equipment, things like that. You can drill down, start with a two-code category of firefighting equipment, and then work your way down. You can be very specific on that. And basically, it's like an automatic sale. You don't really have to do a whole lot. Electronic transaction, e-commerce. And what I can do is I can put two things out there. I can put an RFI request for information. If I do that, what happens is a lot of times companies say, well, they're just kicking tires, see? So I'm not going to bother with that. And one of the reasons we do the RFI is that we don't have a clue how much something costs. We really don't know. So we're going to put an RFI out there just to get some numbers so we can, put a funding request together to get the money. So if you see an RFI out there, you might not want to ignore it. Then there's the other thing is I can convert an RFI in that system to an RFQ, request for quotation. Now what that means in my world is I have money. And what I can do is I can be very specific inside there, line item by line item, what I need. And it's all there. And as a vendor, you can click on it. You can find exactly what's required, part numbers, who the manufacturer might be. And with the government, we have to buy equivalent or equal. So, if there's another vendor that provides something that's similar enough, close, we can buy that. But we can actually specify exactly what we need. Because you remember, in the military, we buy a lot of things that are very specific to only certain. Like I'm buying rescue kits and distress systems for our aircraft. Well, that's the case an aircraft goes down the ocean. So they can put a dive marker out there, and they have an inflatable raft and all that. Well, that's very specific, so there's not a whole lot of companies that do that. But that's where the profit is the specialized things. So I'd look at TSI eBuy as you move ahead, because like I said, it's an automatic sale. You don't do a whole lot. If you're out there and you're in the right categories, the system is smart enough to actually suggest categories to me. They can say, well, you're interested in these kind of products, have you considered this category? Oh, okay, click on there. Yeah, they have that kind of stuff, so I'll put it out there. We can put it out there to numerous vendors. The system will say, hey, you're putting out the 48 vendors. That might be too many. You could say yes or no on that. What you can do is if you register your company, it'll show up on GSA eBuy as female-owned, veteran, whatever it might be. So I can go right down the line. I can say, well, I'm going to pick all the companies that are disadvantaged with set-asides. I can check all those and submit it and leave off the other companies. Okay. Any questions on that? Yes. GSA eBuy? Now, one thing you got to keep in mind if you're going to sell to the federal government, there are a lot of agencies out there. It can be very confusing. You're going to have to research on your own. What you want to take a look at, just go out there. If you hear something, here's Department of Homeland Security in the news, do a search on it. Pretty much everything in the government's public. So DHS.gov, you're going to find Department of Homeland Security. So if you're interested in selling these agencies, you'd have to basically go out and do the research. Again, they all have contracting, but they all call them requesters, but they have different needs. So you can take a look. These agencies will have a repository of current opportunities that are already out there waiting to be purchased. And there's a backlog in a lot of this stuff. So there has been a lot of money put into the system, you know, with Obama's incentive. You've probably heard about the Reinvestment Act and all that. You know, billions of dollars being spent, so why not get some for yourself? How many people on the call pay a lot of taxes in their life? This is just from your money.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I took a government job, so I get back all the money I put in the taxes. Well, with the National Guard, we have a repository like that, and that's on number 9, and that's nationalguardcontracting.org, and that lists opportunities for contractors, supplies, and services. Now, when you're on GSA eBuy, you're going to find mostly products on there. You will see services, but not a lot, mostly products. When you go to these specific sites for agencies, this is where you're going to find services opportunities, consulting, writing applications, whatever it might be. You know, you're looking, whatever a service would be, that's where you're going to find it. So I'd recommend you could hit that site, the NationalGuardContracting.org. That'll show you all the opportunities that are out there with the Air and the Army Guard in every state. Plus Puerto Rico, so that's 51 for you.
There's a Puerto Rico
National Guard, absolutely.
National Guard?
Mm-hmm. Huh. When Obama was running for president, he said 57 states he visited, so I guess there's more out
there.
I didn't know about them, but yeah, there's the Puerto Rican National Guard, yeah. Now, you got to keep in mind that the Army Guard is huge. I mentioned to you I was working with the Army Guard in that G20. I got invited to their annual dinner. They started these dinners right after the Civil War, so you can imagine what it was like. And I went out to Harrisburg for that dinner, and I know that a lot of the history of the Army National Guard in our state, but it turns out the 28th Infantry Division in Pennsylvania is the second largest infantry division in the entire Army. They buy a lot. They have a lot of locations. So Army Guard is big. Air Guard, not so much. You're going to find opportunities. Plus, the Army Guard has a lot of smaller locations, armories throughout, where they only have a few people that man it, so they need services. You know, they're looking, could be anything from janitorial services or vehicle maintenance services might be. Another trend with the federal government is contracting out services. There's opportunities there to pick up a long-term service contracts. That would all be out there on that site. Okay. The last bullet I put out there is a public site, not a government site. It's where you can look up NAICS codes and SIC codes. So that's one of the key things you're going to have to know about when you go into CCR to register your company. And as I mentioned to you, you can go in there, and there's 6 digits in a NAICS code, but the first digit sort of gives you the general category. Then you go and you drill down. It's very specific as you move down the line from left to right. So you know, try to pick ones that fit your business specifically. Don't go overboard. I'd tell most companies have 3. If you have 3, 4, yeah, I'm not skeptical. If you got 24 in there, and you're a small company, I'm skeptical. I don't see how you can do all these things. So that's all I had for you.
Well, that's a good amount.
Anything I can do for you? Is there any questions you have, or if you want to talk about the previous stuff, you know, how to go to work for the government, I can handle that too until the call runs out. I don't know how much time we have, Ava.
At least another 10-15 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll open up the questions. I may not have an answer for you. If I don't, let me get your information. I'll find out, and I'll send you back an email or give you a call.
Okay, well, I do photography, local stuff here in Massachusetts, so none for the government. I do people stuff. Sure. So I guess I could look on and see if they ever needed a photographer to do...
public affairs. Remember, almost every government agency has public affairs and PR. And they hire photographers.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I had never thought of that, but after talking to you today...
Yeah.
What the heck?
And again, your specialty. That's important because people, they talk, okay? They know that, oh, yeah, this company's done a good job for us. You know, these things come up. They're on these systems. When I do a job, I did some services work on our base going back about 8 months. Well, I got another opportunity for another one of our hangars. I go back to the history. I said, well, who did we hire last time? Well, 8 months ago, these are the companies that I hired, or these are the companies that came in for the site visit. And I used them. I called. One of them was out of business. A couple of them said, oh, boy, we're glad. We'd like to come back and do another job for you. We'd like to bid. So once you have a reputation, you can use that. But, the government's real big in PR, and you listen to the politicians. They do a good job, I guess. But, our base, we have a public affairs office. We put out a monthly newsletter. And we spend between $40,000 and $50,000 a month on that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, I will go take a look.
On the entire newsletter.
Yes,
the newsletter is produced by an outside company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, Joan, especially since you've got that the Hanscom Field at the Air Force Base there. Yeah.
Okay. I'll let you know. Something to follow up on in the next week or two.
Yeah, just ask like that. That would be the request. Request for the services, public affairs. On a hands.
Yep.
They have public affairs like we do. Every base.
Mm-hmm.
We have to because when we deploy people, we have to have people talk to the media. Yeah, we like. I'm not telling anything. It's secret or anything, but sometime tomorrow, early tomorrow, we got people leaving our base going to the desert. Well, the media gets wind of that, okay? The media ends up in front of our gate, and they want to know what's going on, and we have to have people out there to talk to the media.
Mm-hmm.
And people like me, I'm not allowed. Nobody come outside the gate, hey, can we ask you a question? You know, no comment, sorry, I got to go. And
yep.
That's the end of it.
So no, that'll be good, I'll try it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, think too about... wherever you live, the kind of federal agencies you'd find. Like around here, I mentioned Office of Surface Mining because there's a lot of mining in Pennsylvania and West Virginia. They have a big regional office here. So you take a look. If you have a high veteran population, you're going to have VA. You might have a VA regional center. Homeland Security. You got Logan Airport. You got Manchester Airport. You got a lot of airports up in New England. Homeland Security could be an opportunity. So you have to sort of think about the area you're in. Like Department of Interior is real big out in the West, here.
Huh.
So, yeah, and then that's how you do your research. It's actually pretty easy to find this stuff on the web just by Googling it and going from there.
Bill, was there a list of agencies on one of those websites? I forgot.
No, not really. Not the things I sent out to you, no. They're very, very specific, but if you look at any phone book, okay, they have a blue section in the phone book, and it's all federal agencies.
Oh, okay.
Right in the phone book, yeah. Yeah, I try to give you the things I use, but like again, I really don't know exactly how things would be done with the VA or Homeland Security, because I don't work for them. I can tell you they have contracting. They all do. So, and they're all spending money.
Yeah.
And especially now the way the economy is, it might be another opportunity to find a job.
Sure.
Anybody else on the call have questions?
Yeah, and I just say, too, don't overlook the state. You know, doing business with the state or local, municipal governments. You might find some opportunities there. They're not as strict as the federal government is on hiring companies. So you can probably find a local municipality would just by because they know you or you're from the area. We can't do those kind of things, but I wouldn't overlook that. Could be another opportunity, you know, for you. Because municipalities, one of the big trends right now with local and state governments is cost cutting. They have to meet, the federal government doesn't have to meet a budget. You know, we just print more money. But state and local governments have a budget they have to meet. So a lot of times they look at saving money by outsourcing.
Well, I want to thank you for your help, Bill.
Oh, not a problem. I hope it worked out for everybody. Like, yeah, you got my email. You know, if you need something, I won't,
yep.
I won't be in for 4 days, thank goodness.
Yeah, have a great week, long weekend.
Yep,
doing,
right.
Doing two parades on Monday, two different, you know, veteran groups. And then that's about all the plans I have for the entire weekend. I wanted the weekend with no plans, so hopefully it'll work out.
Maybe they'll let you unpack those boxes.
Yeah. Whatever one that says miscellaneous, I'll start with first.
Great.
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I want to get into that or not.
Okay.
All righty. Yeah,
well, thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Appreciate your time and effort.
Happy to help.
Yep.
Okay.
Keep me apprised on the trip to Texas. That's on the
written
date. It's going to
be
interesting.
I'll be leaving on the 18th of June. I sent emails off to the people in Austin, San Antonio. There wasn't an email there, so but I did send emails off, and maybe we can pull something off on the weekends. I'll be looking for any reason to get off the base and go do something.
All right, well, good luck with that.
Okay. All righty.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks again, Bill.
You're welcome. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.